Okay, we are live. Hi, this is William Ramsey. Welcome to William Ramsey Investigates. On today's show, I have a very special guest. She goes by The Archivist, and she's the archivist of the Mae Russell Project. If you're watching this on YouTube, X, or Rockman, you can see her at the website right here. And Mae Russell was really an important figure, I think, in American history. She was pre-internet and really one of the real research grinders, like a real person who did a radio show. And she was very intelligent. She had she was well educated. I think she attended Stanford and UC Berkeley, but she also was very suspicious going way back into the 60s. She passed away, I believe, in, what was it, 1988. But she was, and you can see this on the website, she had firsthand like readings, and she was really kind of like the real newspaper clipper type, like analyzing newspaper reports through her radio show. And it was called Dialogue Conspiracy, or later renamed World Watchers International. And some of those, she has a massive archive. She really did a lot of work, a lot of great work, supported by famous people. But the Mae Russell Archivist can talk about that in greater detail. So welcome to the show, The Archivist.
Hello, William. How are you?
I'm doing great. Great. Thanks for agreeing to the interview. I'm really delighted to have you as somebody with first-person knowledge about Mae Russell, somebody who I may not be as familiar, kind of before my time. It's kind of sad to admit that. Maybe not as contemporary as some of the other people that I know, like Alex Jones or Bill Cooper or something like that. But she preceded them, right? So maybe you can talk to maybe people who are from my generation of researchers about, just really answer a simple question. Who is Mae Russell and why is she important?
Well, Mae Russell was the first woman who actually attended Stanford University, and she studied philosophy. She grew up, her father was the rabbi to Hollywood, so they would get all sorts of really cool vacation gifts, and she got to see the world all over the place. And when she was in India, there's actually a picture of her on a camel when she was like 6 or 7. It's an amazing photo. She realized that the world wasn't rich, that there were poor people that had nothing. And it really changed her outlook at that young age of what the world is. She's important now because if you go back through her research, you can see how we ended up where we are. She had a lot of things that, she was before her time in a lot of things, and she got called kooky and all sorts of interesting words, but she pieced a lot of things together. And I wish she was still here today, and I wonder what she would say to all this.
Right, so she's kind of like the first one, piecing things together, really thinking independently, not really trusting the corporate media or those kind of contemporary sources, and really funded by the people as well, too, right?
She was funded by the people, and she would send weekly cassettes out to people all over the United States with a bibliography sheet if you sent her a dollar. And it was really, I think it's interesting how many people across the United States and the world heard of Mae without the internet. And she would be so wonderful to be able to use the internet and see Mae's thoughts for today.
Right. So she, and kind of how did she, do you know what the kind of turning event was? Like usually some of these people who stop kind of believing, like me, stop believing the corporate media and kind of going on their own path. Do you know how that change happened to her?
It was when Oswald got assassinated by Jack Ruby. That was the changing point in her ideology. She realized at that point there was something really wrong with the whole assassination. And in her library, I have come across huge binders of typed sheets of everything she found wrong or she had questions about in the Warren Report that haven't been seen by anyone for years. And these are so detailed, and that's how she really got her start.
Right, so it's the Warren Report. So she was right there in 1963 looking at these kind of the situation after JFK. And did she really start? I know that she was in Central California in Monterey. Is that where she started broadcasting, or how did her kind of writing and broadcasting develop?
She had gone on Dialogue Assassination with Gloria Barron, the first show that we can find that was actually recorded. And Tim Canale out in California it's due to him that we have all her cassettes and that we were able to upload them on our YouTube channel because Tim saved them from all the years and people give them to Tim, and we're thankful for that. So she started on June 10th of 1971 with Gloria, and she became such a hit that she just totally took over the show, and then it was all May from that point. She would have really interesting guests from all different walks of life, and her big thing was, you know, gather the information and make up your own mind. She wasn't there to teach you or sway what you thought of things. She was there to show you the pieces of it and let you get your own conclusion.
Right. So she's like backed it all up with research, and her archives are, it's not like 10 cassettes. It's like thousands and thousands of documents and cassettes, correct?
There's 860 shows we do have up on our YouTube station. And then back a couple months ago, I had gone to where the library is housed, and I was there on a scanning mission because we want to upload all of May's research to a website so everybody in the world can see her research for free. That's what May wanted. So when I had gotten there, and there's 39 filing cabinets, and there's hundreds, if not thousands, of boxes of papers and first edition books and all sorts of really interesting documents that I think could shed some light on the world today. And she's backed up by documentation at the time when she said the things. Wow. So it may not be true today, but she was basing it on 1975, 1983. So.
Right. And what, other than her questioning of the Warren Report, what were her more controversial takes?
Oh, she had a lot of controversial things. One of them was the moon landing. There's a book called Alternative 3, which puts into question the whole idea of us actually touching down on the moon. She was good friends with Paul Krasner of The Realist, and John Lennon donated the $5,000 to May and Paul Krasner to start The Realist. And the first article that May wrote in there was, why was Martha Mitchell kidnapped?
Who was Martha Mitchell? Oh, that was the wife involved in Watergate, right?
Correct. And there's actually a 20-minute video of her actually speaking and talking about this that I can get up on our YouTube station. It's one of the few recordings that I've actually seen of her in speaking. You hear her voice all the time, but you actually can get an essence of who she is.
Of May Brussell or Martha Mitchell?
Of May Brussell.
Brussell, gotcha. So you kind of see her independently talk and not doing her show. Like, she was a first-rate mind, in my opinion. And so she was involved in all these she's really kind of a parapolitical analyst before that term became popularized. Like, she covered MLK, JFK, RFK, Watergate, kind of all this stuff, all the way up. And was around with Manson, too, right?
She was around with Manson, and that gets me into how I became involved in this, and it's really a heart trip for me. I was doing some research on the Manson case, and I had contacted Preston Guillory, who was the LASO officer, who basically was a whistleblower and let people know what was actually going on in the sheriff's department, and everybody had blacklisted him. He couldn't get a job. He had nowhere to go. And May Brussell took him in. And actually, I was speaking with Barbara, May's one daughter, and she remembers my friend being at her house. So his big thing was he'd never gone to her grave. And so he wanted me, we became such good friends that he wanted me to go to May's grave with him. But we didn't get a chance to do that because he died of cancer. So my big thing was, I was searching the internet just for May Brussell, and I came across this article by Matthew Lazar of, Political Radio, Radio Survivor. And he had this, you know, we have stuff that we need to get done, her archives. and assorted things. So I contacted Matthew to say, hey, I'll do whatever I can do. I'll volunteer my time to make sure that this stuff gets out there. So he put me in contact with a person named Lewis Rames, who was basically the spearhead of this project in the beginning to get everybody motivated. And Lewis put me in contact with Barbara Brussel, May's daughter. And Barbara and I consider her a dear, dear friend now. And when I was out in California, Barbara took me to May's grave, and also her sister Bonnie, who was murdered in an accident. And Barbara survived that accident, but her sister Bonnie was killed. So it was very emotional for me, and I'm on a mission with love in my heart to make sure her information gets out there.
Right, because she's like right around that time. She's putting it out before the internet, really, like, and connected to a lot of other researchers at the time or publishing their work, right? Can you talk about that?
She had Penn Jones on her show. The one guy, I think he was from Sweden. I can never say his name. It's a JJ name, Joachim or Jostein maybe. And she actually, and I haven't seen these around anywhere. She has a 12-volume set of things he self-published, which it's amazing information. And she, Yoko and John Lennon, she Dick Gregory, she had all sorts of people that she was connected to. And she would have these marvelous dinner parties at her house where everybody just kind of hung out. They had to bring a dish that took more than 10 minutes to make. And they all just sat around talking and discussing world politics.
Well, the, right. So she kind of had a little bit of a salon on the West Coast, something like that, right?
It was kind just
felt like-minded people.
It was her home, and she opened it up to everyone. I mean, which is remarkable, because nowadays, you know, we look at people, we won't let them in our house or in our lives because we're suspicious. But she had such an open view of things, even though what she was reporting on was so distressing, that I'm amazed that she could still open her heart and love people and humanity. And that was her big thing, you know, to save humanity as it is for our future generations. And she had this one dinner party planned for New Year's Eve the one year. And her one friend showed up, and they're sitting there, and the lady's like, well, where's everybody else? And May was like, oh, I forgot to send the invitations.
Wow. And she kind of was an early researcher into mind control as well. Can you talk about that?
She was. I don't really know that much, and I would put people toward the taped interviews and recordings of May. And we're actually working on an index of all her shows. A very kind gentleman named Patrick Omens had documented, and it took him years to do, and he separated by names and subjects, a 600-page index of all May's shows. So we're trying to get that together and publish that out there as a fundraiser so we can continue to do what we do. Because there's website fees, there's storage fees, there's all sorts of things, and we want to make sure that we have enough money to get it all done.
Had you know, or are you aware if Brussel, May Brussel or her family ever wanted to take her papers maybe to her alma mater, to Stanford or Berkeley or anything like that?
Not that I'm aware of. There's suspicion of those universities. I think it was down at Baylor at one point that they were going to donate her archives, and they were getting the final touches on it, and the person they ended up dealing with died, and nobody else showed any type of interest in it. After May died, the collection first went to John Judge, who everybody knows, and then when John passed, it went to Tom Davis. And then it ended up in somebody's cellar for 30 years, and they wouldn't give it back to the family.
Wow.
And finally, we're able to get it, and we have it, and we just want to make sure it gets out there.
Yeah, you got to kind of watch out. If it goes into archives, you don't know what's going to happen to it or whether people will really care for it, honestly. Like, that's the whole thing, is this is like a preservation project. Like, somebody's gone through. Like, I have the Visigoth archive or some of it. It's not complete, but people are still going through there. They're finding value in shows that people tried to tell the truth at a certain day and time. Like a lot of those were records from the early 2000s, but people are still interested on the topic of whatever people were talking about.
And another thing that happened to May was, you know, she was talking about the conspiracy and the problems with the assassination of John Kennedy. And she had gotten in contact with Jim Garrison. And she had flown out to Jim Garrison and gave him her research on the assassination. So on the way back from that meeting, her plane got stopped because of a bomb threat, supposedly. They took May off in a separate room and finally rerouted the plane or whatever. And when she got home, all the papers that she had taken to show Garrison were destroyed.
Wow, that's fascinating. And do you know what year that was?
67.
So it was right there, right when his investigation was picking up.
Right. And on that note, a dear friend of the Mae Brussels Project, John Barber, has 67 boxes of Jim Garrison's papers that were saved from his office before they could be destroyed. And he's given us permission to scan them and make them digital, which we're very proud to do for him.
Yeah, John Barber, B-A-R-B-O-U-R, right?
Correct. He's an awesome guy. He's got quite the history. And he was, you know, friends of the Mae Brussels Research Library. So
I wasn't aware of that. I didn't know he had a connection to Mae Brussels. I know he had a very close connection to Garrison and talked to him on the phone. Like some of those conversations are still bouncing around the internet. I think he did a documentary about Garrison and appreciated Garrison's work. Yeah.
He actually did two films on JFK and Garrison. And I would recommend everybody to visit his YouTube channel as well and watch the documentaries because they were so close to each other. And Jim on his deathbed was still talking about JFK. So that shows his dedication.
Right. I mean, he still kind of was wrapped up in it, whether he liked it or not. It was part of his life. But he was really the one who spearheaded. I'm still reading through some of the Trail of the Assassins to this day. So it is interesting, and it makes sense that Russell and Garrison and Barber would all overlap their research and stuff like that. So
everything seems to overlap in so many different directions. It gets kind of crazy. And I just, you know, at some point you just have to draw this big circular map of things and start connecting all the so-called coincidences and things and realize how we got where we are today. And May's vision of things just was outstanding. She had figured out how the assassinations and what led up to them would happen for the assassination to take place. And she had gone to see Rose Kennedy. This was the night before Bobby went into the ambassador. And she passed Rose a note and said, "Do not let your son go up there. They are going to kill him." And there you go.
Around the whole thing. So she was leading into that.
I mean, so, and then she went off the air like twice. I think the first time was in 1975 when she was threatened by Sandra Good. And she went off the air, I think, for a couple months at that point. And then when she last.
Sandra Good of the Manson family, right?
Correct. Correct.
And how did that happen? Can you go in more detail about that?
The International Court of whatever Sandy and Squeaky were pretending to have. They sent her a letter, which hopefully is in her archives, that will show what had happened. But they basically said, you know, stop talking about this, blah, blah, corporations, you know, Sandra's run-of-the-mill stuff that you would say. But then May came back, and she went on to start broadcasting from her home at some point. And back to the Manson family, May had this friend. Her name was Louise James. And Louise James lived around the corner from May, and Louise and May saw supposedly Charles Tex Watson going into this house down there, which was really kind of odd. And, you know, they put two and two together saying, hey, you know, this something's not right here. And so to get Louise James to shut up, they put her in a mental hospital, and she never came out.
So, oh, wow, that's terrible.
It's terrible. I mean, everybody writes in and says, you know, do you know what happened to Louise James? And, you know, I talked to the family about it, and they said, you know, they put her in the mental hospital. And then the next time she went off the air, it was 1988, and Colonel Michael Aquino threatened May and said, you know, hey, you better stop talking about this stuff, or you're going to end up like the people you talk about. She was talking about the Presidio, and I think Merton was around that time, too. So
what was the other one? Oh, Merton's death? Is that what you said?
Pardon me?
Did you say Thomas Merton?
No.
Oh, okay. So I thought you said Presidio and something else.
Oh, McMartin.
McMartin, right. Oh, McMartin.
And so she had gone off the air. And around this time, you know, the Strange family moved in across the street from May. And they had all sorts of weird going on in that house. And she, you know, being May, she noticed this. And within 6 months of going off the air, May died of cancer. The morning she died, the house across the street went up in flames. So take, you know, that with what you want to. You know, there's just so much that has been done to Mae Russell's family. Her one son was in the late 60s, at some point was dosed with LSD from the government, and he never was quite the same after that. And then there's the accident that killed Bonnie Brussel, that Barbara was in on the accident. She was there, but she was like the only survivor. I mean, I think there's another girl from that accident. So there's all sorts of things that they were doing to this woman, allegedly. Let's throw that in there.
Right. There was kind of like a long series of misfortunes around the Brussel family, right? Kids and deaths and car crash and cancer and things like that.
I mean, it just amazes me, you know, the strength of the remaining family members. As I said, you know, I have gotten really close to Barbara Brussel, and she's a delightful woman. And just the strength and courage in her, you know, makes me want to be a better person. It makes me really want to get this project done.
Right. So do you have like a time of, I mean, when did the project get started, and when would you like it to be completed?
It started, I want to say, about 2 years ago through Matthew Lazar and Louis Rames. And then it snowballed and got bigger and bigger from there. The quantity of stuff, there's only a couple of us right now scanning, because that's just the way it is. And there's two humongous storage units full of May's things. And I was down there for a month, and I scanned and I scanned 2 terabytes of information, and that didn't even make a dent in May's archive.
Wow.
So it's going to take, you know, an army or me or whatever, a couple years to do. So
when you're done scanning, what's your intent? Are you going to make it public, or what's your kind of means with which you will distribute the information?
Oh, we're going to make it public, definitely, at the Mae Brussel Research Library.com. That's our intended place to upload and organize all May's research. And we would also like to have a building where people can actually come and, you know, see May's things. And, you know, May has her own recipe. She was quite the, you know, cook, and, you know, have a little thing with May's cookies or postcards or anything like that. That would be like a long-term goal, and we would really love to accomplish that.
Right, and people are still interested. I see new books coming about her, kind of like essential Mae Brussel and things like that. So she still gets, at least in the research community, John Judge and these people all respected her as kind of like one of the luminaries, really, right?
They did, and she never really thought of herself that way. She just wanted to get the information out there. She saw the destructive nature of things that were going on, and she wanted to put the information out there so people could make their own decisions and come to their own conclusions. And as she always says, do the research. Don't depend on her to do the research. Do your own research.
Gotcha. And kind of what were some of her other insights or roles? I mean, she didn't just focus on one subject. She was covering just a wide variety of parapolitical topics, right?
she covers a bunch. And the thing is, we have a TikTok channel along with our YouTube and our Facebook group. And we were uploading, you know, short TikToks of, you know, pieces of May's show. And so we kept getting banned. We kept getting warning. And now if they give us one more warning, they're going to take down our channel. So I don't know who we bothered, but it was, you know, on things like mind control and bio warfare and things like that seemed to be what triggered the TikTok. But then just to mess around, I had re-put up one of the TikToks 5 minutes later and they didn't ban it. So I don't know how they do that.
Yeah, it's weird. Like some of them are algorithms and who knows, like these days somebody follows it or there's an interested party trying to suppress information, they'll flag it. It's so strange. But yeah, some of these websites there, you cannot put your information out there. So it's just like, it's just something else, you know, it's a weird environment. The censorship environment is something I never really expected. I should have been less naive, but, and that's, I think, a concern of May Brussels' information, right?
And she has backup to everything she says. So if they had a problem with what she was, you know, saying, I could provide information and documentation that that was what was going on at that time. We're not saying that, you know, it's true today or anything like that, because things do change. But they didn't give us that opportunity. They don't tell you why they ban you. They just do it. We had 3 shows that were banned on YouTube too, and I appealed those and I got 2 of the 3 back. So the only one that was banned still, I think it was July 7th of, oh, I don't remember the year, but I can put it out there, and they would not let us re-upload that anymore.
Oh, interesting. I think somebody in the chat said that they banned something from like biowarfare that because of COVID. Like something that she was talking about like 30 years ago, right? 40 years ago.
Yeah, she had said that. And then the 3 bans that we did get from YouTube cited, you know, going against medical whatever and the COVID. And I'm like, well, this was 1988. How, you know, relevant is the COVID? She had nothing to do with any of that. So it was peculiar, to say the least.
And John B. asked, do you know what type of cancer she had?
Yes, it was uterine.
Uterine, oh wow. Yeah, and she kind of died pretty fast too, right?
It was within 6 months of getting off the air. She had, you know, passed away. And, you know, the whole thing with that house across the street, who knows, you know, what was going on there allegedly. And with it burning down, it really makes you wonder. And there's like a newspaper article that shows that the house did burn down. So it's not... You know, we have receipts if we're given the opportunity to show them.
Right, and that was in Monterey too, right?
Correct.
Did she ever formally write a book or compile things into something for publication, or she just had her archives in her radio shows? Or can you explain that?
We came across, and we don't know what's in the other boxes or anything, but came across a screenplay that she had written. So I gave it to the family, and I don't know what their plans are with it, but it was really kind of neat to see and to just be able to touch. I mean, everything was done on the typewriter, on paper, and putting these binders, and just, you know, to type that out and still run a family. I mean, she took her kids to, you know, games, to band, to whatever, and then still have all the time that this must have taken her to do. I mean, it's just astounding. I mean, did the woman never sleep? I don't know.
Right, yeah. She was really sharp. Growing greener. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I see Tim Canale. Tim Canale is the one that I had mentioned that saved the tapes of May Brussel, and we have a lot of, you know, love for Tim as well. I had the pleasure of meeting Tim when I was out in California, and I actually dealt with him when I ordered the box set from him of May's shows. And he had... been there, and I was just like, when Barbara had brought up, oh, contact Tim, I'm like, oh my God, I know him. So Tim's been around for many, many years, and I have the utmost respect for Tim.
Gotcha. And Richard asks again, was there a show national or local?
I would have to say that somehow it was national. I'm not quite sure because, you know, the people ordering tapes and stuff, I'll have to correct myself on that. But I'd like to say that it was national. And oddly enough, just recently on the Tucker Carlson show, Roseanne Barr brought up Mae Brussel and how her father listened to Mae Brussel and said that she was a woman of integrity. And she was. Yeah. She, you know, told it like it was, and you have to respect that.
And they had to distribute things back in the day. You couldn't just download them or put them on a website. It was a lot of tapes. People would buy cassette tapes, right? Or ask for transcripts. It was almost like Samizdat, kind of underground pamphleteers back in the day.
We have the cassettes. She did send out. You sent her a dollar. She'd send you a cassette and a bibliography sheet with all the articles that she did use in the show of the week. So she was, I don't know how she did that. I think she did have help as far as that goes, doing that. I would hope she did at least.
But getting a $5,000 grant from Lennon, that's a significant amount of money back then. Like, that went a long way. I'm sure that helped.
It did help. And, you know, John and Oko called up May and said, hey, I want to have your kids over for milkshakes. So the kids went over to John and Yoko's house and drank milkshakes. I mean, just the times that they had. And May took them to shows and rock festivals and everything. I mean, that would be like the coolest mother ever. You know?
Right. Were they in New York at the time, or was that on the West Coast? Do you know?
That was in Monterey.
That was in Monterey. So the Yoko and Lennon had some kind of connection to Monterey?
I would think so, but I don't know enough about that to really say anything.
Deanna is asking, does the guest know who did the acid rock guitar intro for Dialogue?
No, we've been looking for that and looking for that. And actually, it's funny because got a copyright violation from Russia on that. That was really kind of interesting. No, and I think it's marvelous. And we're looking forward to doing a podcast on our channel discussing, you know, May's take on things. And if it went into something of today and bringing all that. So we're going to start our own podcast. So
interesting. Yeah, that's a good idea. It's a good way to kind of get it out there and get kind of information out and let people listen. But Dan also says that he has a hunch it was a young Randy Hansen, a Bay Area Hendrix protege.
Could he write in with that information? And so maybe we can track him down. That's really, you know, thank you for that.
And yeah, Dan, if you can send something to the Mae Brussel Research Library website, that'd be great. We can follow up on that.
And,
go ahead.
Frank Zappa, there's a story that he gave May the computer and she never used it. And there's also the story that he wanted to buy her a computer but didn't. So, I mean, just the connections that she had.
Growing Greener asks, was the Bandit episode about Pan-Germanism and that Hitler was planned by the Meds as far back as late 1890 was the talk of a Fuhrer being built up by the media? Do you know anything about that?
No, I think it was more on bio warfare and COVID, because 2 years ago we're just coming out of the COVID, so I imagine that was the hot topic that they were really, really looking for. The best way to donate I see to the Mae Brussel Project is if you go to maybrusselresearchlibrary.com. It lists all the way that you could donate to help us, you know, bring this to a reality. Because it does, as I said, take money to get people to scan, upload to the website. And we want to make sure that we do have funding in place for after we're gone. Because, you know, we want to make sure that it continues on. So,
right. Yeah. And one of the things you can do to self-fund is just charge people a dollar a show. It's a very easy way. But if you get enough listeners, it's definitely worthwhile. Like that $1, but by thousands of people will pay that. So it's one way to keep it self-sustaining.
We had a chance to, once we had 1,000 subscribers on the channel, to, you know, be commercialized, then we're not going to do that, because you can't control those commercials. You could have her talking about something, sure, and then have this commercial come on. And I think the Brussels family wants to make everything available to the public at no charge. So, you know, that's a really brilliant idea, William. But, I mean, if people would donate through the May Brussels Research Library.com website, we greatly appreciate it. I mean, it's going to take a lot of money to, you know, make this come true. And it would mean so much to a lot of different people. I mean, so many comments, so many people write in. Just the love that people had for May and her research is very, very touching.
And what's your process of scanning? I mean, there should be pretty high-end scanning, like printers or digital copying facilities or things that kind of expedites it. Is that kind of what you're using, or what's your process?
We have purchased scanners that are high quality, and they do have the OCR capability, so they are scannable by searching. So, I mean, it's just a time-consuming endeavor, because some of the material is old and you don't want to damage it. So you have to be really careful on how you scan things.
Gotcha. And so that process is ongoing. And so you want to have a online presence and a brick and mortar as well, right?
Correct. Correct. That's our, you know, dream come true. And, you know, a perfect society, we could have our little shop and have nice things and, you know, just get people together again and talk about things that matter, not talk about Kim Kardashian, you know, the type of car they have, but actually talk about the events of the world and get together and see, maybe we can't do anything, but if we don't even make the effort to do something, then, you know, what is it?
Right. It's even worse. Yeah. I mean, I think she really cared about the world, and I think that's what her goal was, is kind of like this new kind of historian, really, of what was going on. Because she was really at the epicenter of so much, just being in California. How did she come in contact with Aquino? I mean, how did that relationship happen? I mean, how did he even know about her? I guess she was just doing that reporting on the Presidium.
She was doing the reporting. I think it was the beginning of 88, maybe even 87. I'd really have to look. And he had to, you know, hear of her from somewhere. And, you know, she didn't make a secret of her phone number or anything. So it's probably pretty easy to get in contact with her. I mean, at one point, May had gotten a phone call from somebody pretending to be the police, saying that they had the daughter Barbara in their custody, and she would have to come and get her out. Hmm. And so May was just like, okay, Barbara's supposed to be at college. You know, what's going on here? So May did call the police station, and they didn't have her. They were trying to get May out of the house for some reason.
Interesting. So she was being harassed for trying to, like, as the standard truth teller, like all these other people who told. Some that met, unfortunately, the 60s was very tough on independent journalists. But she died in what, 88, is that right?
88.
Yeah, that's right.
So, yeah. I mean, her legacy does live on, and people still contact us, you know, and want the information on subjects. And, you know, we just want to be able to provide, you know, the best information we can, you know, to be correct, and also for May.
Right. And what you have stuff uploaded, you have things at your YouTube channel, you said you have TikTok. Where can people find what is available online?
On TikTok, we're the May Brussels Project. On YouTube, we are the May Brussels Project, which we started out with the May Brussels Project as getting things done, getting people together and getting all this done and scanned and whatever. And the research library will be the finished product where everything's uploaded and everything, just, you know, because there's some confusion there. So the end product will be the library.
And the library, but your YouTube channel has a lot of different shows on there. I mean, I'm looking.
We have them all in chronological order in playlists.
So they're all in playlists on YouTube right now.
Mm-hmm. We did.
And yeah, well, I mean, the AI today, you can easily put those through and get transcripts too. Like, that's something to think about.
We do have someone in Los Angeles who's in law school providing transcripts to us of shows. And he has a certain software, I guess, they use for court records. And he's running the stuff through there. And we also hope to have that up on the website, plus bibliography sheets and everything, just so May's world is up for everybody to go through.
And if people want to reach out to you, donate, or talk with you, is there a good, what's the best place? Is it your website?
It is, and the email is maybrusselresearchlibrary@gmail.com. I mean, so if you have any questions, you want to donate. Yes, Dan Kay, there is an index in process. Patrick Owens, who is a fan of May, spent many, many years taking the information and breaking it up by subject, by name, and by everything. And that's over 600 pages long. So we're trying to get that together to publish, to use as a fundraiser for the library. And we hope to have that in the near future.
Gotcha. And so, again, this was The Archivist, and we talked about the official May Brussel project, very important place to keep all this information alive, and people base their work on her work. John Judge, I think, was very much influenced by her, and she influenced a whole set of researchers who've said influenced a whole set of researchers. So she has kind of like a research offspring that lead up to today. So very important.
The research offspring of the first generation were called the Brussels sprouts.
That's cute. That's good. That's perfect. Who were they? Do you know any of their names? Like, or I know John Judge.
Judge. I'm sure that I can find out and get back to you about that.
That's interesting. Yeah. Because I wonder who else was.
They're all over the place, and I'm just happy, you know, to get the response from people that we do, and people are still interested, and that's really so awesome, and it means a lot to the Brussels family as well, that people really respected their mother, and
still do. Yeah. I mean, there's a whole nother people going back because she had a first person kind of seat for a lot of that stuff. Sometimes I don't know a lot of that history either. I mean, I was born in 68 and really got interested in this stuff later in life. So
I'm 67, born in 67. So I have a lot of things to listen to of May's and to learn about. So it's a journey scholarly as well for me as one from the heart.
Yeah, and a lot of important subjects with a lot more to the story than what the media told people at that time, right? There wasn't a lot of places people to go that could go to get a different analysis, right? I mean, I think the controls were much, you know, I grew up listening to ABC, NBC, CBS, and that was it. Maybe some talk radio, mm-hmm. but so it's a lot different today, but back then she was definitely a trailblazer. Yeah. So thank you so much. Anything you'd like to add? Anything I missed before we wrap up?
If people really love May and want to help us out to get this going, if you could please make a donation, it would be greatly appreciated. And if you go to the maybrusselresearchlibrary.com, you can find all the information on the different ways to donate. And William, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing all the information and your time. I appreciate it as well. So thanks so much. Thanks for listening, everybody. Please go to the May Brussel Research Library, and I'll put a link to the YouTube channel so you can listen to some of her shows. But have a great evening. Thank you. Stay there.